right. I'm reading The Devil in Connecticut. Same author as the one who wrote The Demonologist. Gerald Brittle, author of The Demonologist. A Connecticut couple have rented a house. Arnie Cheyenne Johnson, and Debbie. Debbie has three younger brothers. They rented the house, and when they got to the house, some strange things happened, particularly in a room where little David, the younger brother, alone in the room, was shoved by an unseen force that felt like a hand onto a waterbed that was in the house, and an apparition appeared in front of him, saying, "Beware." Scared the poor kid half to death. He was scared to tell it for fear he wouldn't be believed. He shared it with his older brother. They went in and shared it with his mother and his sister and her boyfriend, who were moving into the house with her boyfriend's mother. He then indicated an ability to still see this apparition in the house in the other town, even though he was not there. They went back the next day. Some of the things he had seen were verified. They determined they wouldn't move into the house, had a fight with Arnie Johnson's mother, who felt like that the plans they'd laid were being messed up by, as she would term it, the lying imaginations of this younger brother of Debbie, her daughter-in-law-to-be. They have such a fight. They separate. Debbie and Arnie move back temporarily to Debbie's parents, the Glatzels, until they can find another place. While they are there, this poor little kid, David, I think he's about 11, chubby boy, always outgoing and gleeful, comes panic-stricken into the room, claims to see this apparition. And that's where we left off. "He's coming, Mommy," he says. "He just left. He's coming to get me." "Who's coming, David?" "He's coming to take me. You got to stop him." "He's coming down Route 25. It's floating fast above the treetops." Now, February 1981, Arnie Johnson, the young man, who is in love with David's older sister, Debbie, and is in the house, will be arrested for murder and claim that the killing occurred as he was under the possession of the devil. And to make the story short, in one of the most horrible cataloging of infestation, oppression, possession, in one of the most horrifying, I can't find a better word for it, exorcisms, when it seems that after the boy David is finally possessed and the priest is performing the exorcism on him, that he will die in the struggles as the demonic force is resisting being cast out of the boy. Arnie, in a moment of compassion, will throw himself on the boy, crying and screaming, "Take me." In an act of compassion for the boy, he will scream, "Take me. Let him go." Now, there are laws that bind demon forces to those that understand the laws of God. They'll give you warning. There's a little clue to pick up here. This apparition's first words to David were, "Beware." You either better understand how to exercise at that point or get the living daylights out of there. Just remember this. Some of you get too scared. There will be a way to trace the entrance, the reason, the origin, the contact, and they must give warning. There's a point where you can stop during the infestation beginnings. And they can't theologize, I want to read the story. But I'll say this. When Arnie invited him in an altruistic moment, he didn't save the boy. He just opened the door for dual possession. And possession came to Arnie, and in the terrible moment, witnessed by two people, he kills a man and pleads demon possession, and you'll be the judge of the story is read. He was not allowed to carry that plea into the courtroom through a technicality, and he was sentenced to murder. What made this story that wouldn't have come out, because the battling of the demons by the priest and the exorcism fell into the category of privileged confession, that the trial brought the story out. Now, if this story is not true, Random House and the authors ought to be sued for peddling such a story as a fraud on the general public. It's the most unbelievable story I've ever read. I again want my Ghostbusters in the area to check it out. It's too unbelievable. But it's believable if you understand demon forces. Now, he's coming. It just went past Brookfield Center Post Office. It's getting closer. Terror had overtaken the boys. Tears welled up in David's eyes while his voice rose until he was screaming. He's by the church. No, he's above the Silver Mine Road. He's coming fast. Stop him, Mommy. He's coming for me. He's almost here. Help me, Mommy. David pleaded wildly. My God, what'll I do? Judy cried. Holy water. I got holy water. I'll get the holy water against it. She ran into her bedroom, grabbed a small bottle of holy water from a topper dresser. He's coming. He's crossing the getting jar, David reported hysterically. Then his eyes wide open, his mouth agape, David backed away from the door as far as he could get. It's here. It's on the back porch. It's at the back door. Three ominous knocks suddenly sounded. Arnie and Debbie blanched, while Judy threw a spray of holy water on the back door, declaring, "In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, leave us in peace." Staring at the kitchen door, David reported with momentary relief, "It worked. He hates it. He's moving into the backyard." All seemed well for a few seconds. "Oh no," David cried, "now he's coming around the front. He's going to try and get in the front door." Judy ran to the front door, blessed it with the sign of the cross, and commanded, "In the name of Jesus Christ, go back to where you came from." "That stopped him again," said David, more confident now. "Is it gone?" Judy asked desperately. "No, he's moving around the house, looking for another place to get in," David said. The entity then attempted entry through every door, window, and access point, including the cellar and fireplace. Frantically, Judy threw holy water wherever and whenever David told her to. She felt both silly and scared, casting around holy water and commanding unseen spirits to leave, but she also believed her son. Finally, David reported that the entity had stopped trying to get in and was now sitting on a lawn chair in the backyard. Sure enough, a lawn chair that had been folded up on the porch had mysteriously been set up on the lawn. Soon David told him the spirit was leaving. First it went next door to the Giddings house, where it inspected Arnie and Debbie's belongings in the basement. Then it drifted back above the treetops to the rental house in Newtown. The weird experience left everyone shaken and disturbed. They all wanted to declare the episode ridiculous and forget about it. But their fear was real. Suppose the thing came back? Suppose it got in when someone was home alone? Then Carl, the dad, returned home. No one had yet told him about the spirit, or so-called spirit problem. Knowing her father didn't believe in such things, Debbie held nothing back as she described the events that persuaded them not to take the rental house. I hear a New Englander saying this. You let $500 go down the drain because an 11-year-old boy told you there might be a ghost in that house? Carl Glatzel was incredulous. That's right, Debbie said, along with the statements of two other women who lived on the property that I skipped over and didn't tell you about. The dog's unusual behavior and all the craziness that's going on in this house since the whole thing began. What do you have to say, David? Carl asked. She's telling the truth, the boy replied. David might as well have said nothing. Carl simply looked at him and said, I don't buy it. You're all dreaming. See, even Daddy thinks you're crazy, Carl, the oldest brother, said. Mom, Debbie, Arnie, Alan, Jason, David are all flipping out. They're all nuts. They've gone cuckoo. Discussion soon degenerated into a shouting match. It was bedtime. Arnie and Debbie would spend the next few nights in sleeping bags on the living room floor till they found a place. At 11:15, when the three boys were settled, Debbie went to the bedroom to check on Jason and say goodnight. They went back to the house the next day. I'm trying to hunt and pick because I want to get to the real good part. Debbie's eye was injured. They went to the doctor. I'll skip over that. When they came back, David said, you know how this happened to my eye? David said, truthfully, no, I didn't see it, but the ghost man was laughing real hard when it happened. He said he did it. Ghost man hell, Debbie said disgustedly. This thing isn't a ghost. It's a bleep beast. The beast had just said to me, the beast had just said to me, David corrected. Where's the thing now, Judy asked. David turned and pointed. He's standing on the hill over there watching us. He's been watching me all morning. He's trying to find a way to get into this house. This is ridiculous, Judy said. We've got to put a stop to this nonsense. How, Debbie asked. No one had an answer. That afternoon, the family drove to Norwalk for a July 4th picnic with relatives on the shore. Got rained out. Skip along. They pulled into the driveway the night of July 4th. Looked for a minute as though all the lights were on in the house. Yet, as they pulled up to the garage, the house stood dark and foreboding. Carl, the dad, led the way inside. He refused to give credence to the flighty notions that his children and wife had spoken about. His attitude was one of complete and unswerving denial of this foolishness. Young Carl took his cue from his father, promptly followed him into the house. The rest of the family followed. David remained in the car. He knew something the others didn't. About 10 minutes later, Arnie went out and found David sitting in the back seat of the station wagon. What's the matter, Arnie asked. He climbed in and sat beside David. The thing. That beast thing. It's inside the house. It got in through the attic. It's there right now, David said. What's it doing up there? Waiting. No, I mean, why is it there? I told you before it came to get me. Why you? I don't know. It was hard for Arnie to... You want me to continue?
Yes, sir.
It was hard for Arnie to deal with the boy, though David spoke with conviction. He was talking about something invisible, indeed something seemingly impossible. Arnie was simply reduced to speaking on his level. David, even if the beast is up there, we're going to find a way to get rid of it. And with all of us around, he's not going to get to you. He's not going to take you anywhere. He'll have to go through me. He'll have to go through all of us first. Now, come on, let's go inside now. No way, David declared. I'm not going in there. I'll sleep in the car. You don't understand what I'm talking about. None of you do. He wants to kill me. He said so. As Arnie and David sat in the car, Carl Lapso, the father, came out. He walked over to David's side of the car and opened the door and said, "Let's go, son. I want you in the house." "No," David said, disobeying his father for the first time in his life. "Don't tell me no, David. Get your bleep off that seat and march into the house." He didn't say bleep. "Or I'll pick you up and carry you in." David got out of the car and walked into the house with Arnie and his father. There was nothing perceptibly different inside the house. Jason, young Carl, and Carl Sr. went to sleep early. David, however, refused to go to bed, and Judy allowed him to stay in the living room with the rest. About 10:30 that night, there were three knocks at the front door. Judy assumed it was Pat Giddings, opened the door. Strangely, though, no one was at the door. All was quiet for the next few minutes. Then they heard what sounded like barely audible scratching inside the living room wall. They listened intently for a minute. Suddenly, an unmistakable boom resounded in the attic. There was silence for a few seconds. Then what sounded like footsteps walked across the attic floor above them. "Arnie," Judy said in a terrified whisper, "there's somebody up there." Arnie did not reply, just continued listening to the noises. Next, a muffled boom, boom, boom was heard downstairs in the kitchen. Then the scratching noise started again. They couldn't find him, just noise. The heat wave was getting worse. They had just experienced the first stage of diabolical manifestation. Later that day, I'm a couple of days later now, when the rest of the family was out of the house, I can't read all this book to you, so I'm going to put it in the bookstore. Why don't you read it? Judy spoke with David. She wanted to get to the bottom of the problem. "How do you feel, honey? Do you have a fever or anything?" "I feel fine," David replied. "I'm fine. Tell me about this thing you've been seeing. What does it look like and where is it now?" "I'm not supposed to talk about him," David replied. He's going to kill me," he said. "Well, I want to know, and I'm your mother. You're my son. You have a right to talk to me." "I don't know, Mommy. I'm scared. The beast told me that he's now my father, and I'm only supposed to listen to him and say my prayers to him." "What?" Judy was incredulous. "That's what he told me," David said. "And if I don't obey him, he said he's going to have me stabbed. Another time said he's going to have me shot." He describes him to her, what he'd been saying to him. The continuation of the discussion reaches this point. "David, you've been reading your catechism, and you know that Jesus..." "He says he's more powerful than Jesus," David interrupted. "That he's in charge of the world." Oh, no. David pulled back in the chair, stared with fright at something in the center of the room. Then he spoke as though there was someone present. "I didn't mean to. She told me to talk." "No, don't." Suddenly, Judy heard the sound of a loud slap. David's head spun to the side as a red mark appeared on his cheek. The event was incredible. She automatically jumped up and shouted angrily, "How dare you hit my son?" A second later, I want to read the exorcism. I like to read the end of a book. I want to read the worst exorcism you've ever heard in your life. All this went in between. Forgive me, I want to know. You want to hear the exorcism?
Yes, sir.
most terrifying I've ever read. Clarita in the Philippines wasn't this bad. Now, I don't have to read it to you unless you insist. Alan and Jason were asleep. Before I get to the exorcism, pull the lights down. Forgot to scare him by lighting my pipe in the darkness as we came on. Missed the cue. Now I want to know if you're beginning to recognize the similarity in these stories. Lester Sumrall didn't know anything about these people. Clarita Villanueva in the Bilibid prison in Manila, she didn't know anything about this. The Donovans didn't know anything about how to have things happen the same way as they're happening in this case. Again, you know, I teach to get a gestalt. All this is too unbelievable. I can't believe any of it. And yet I do. Get this story going. I don't want to get to the exorcism yet. That night around 10 o'clock, the intermittent noises stopped. The family went to bed shortly after 11. And David, despite strong resistance, was made to lie in his own bed with the light off. He could not, however, fall asleep. A dread fear was building up in him. David was sure something terrible was about to happen. Alan and Jason were asleep. David felt totally alone. He desperately wanted to get up, but was petrified to leave his bed, his only safe spot. Then it began. Oh, he was hitting them. Yeah, that's where I should have finished that. Suddenly, Judy heard the sound of a loud slap. David's head spun to the side as a red mark appeared on his cheek. The event was incredible. She automatically jumped up and shouted angrily, "How dare you hit my son?" A second later, David was slapped in the face again. "Don't, Mommy, don't talk back to him, please." Judy stood silent, fearing more would happen. Things settled down. They discussed a while. A few minor, by comparison, things happened. And they went to bed. And that's the scenario I'm now at. Afraid to leave his bed. Then it began. "David," said a low, strong voice from a distance. David's heart began to race. Then he heard slow, heavy breathing in the room. "David." The voice said again, Only this time, it seemed much nearer. David drew the covers up to his neck and stared out into the dark room. He knew what the voice was. I got a speech impediment. David. We're having fun. Halloween never been like this. This is serious, too. Where else do you get put to bed with a ghost story like this? David. The voice spoke even more clearly and now obviously in the room. I am speaking to you, David. Answer me, it commanded sharply. David whimpered. I hear you. Can you see me, David? No. Do you want to see me, David? No. What you want is for me to go away, isn't it? Yes. Then I will. I will go away forever. If you give me just one thing that I need, will you give it to me? David hesitated. What do you want me to give you? David hesitated. What do you want me to give you? David hesitated. What do you want me to give you? He hesitated. What is that? What do you want me to give you? Don't ask me questions, you scum. Just answer. Now, will you give me what I want? If you say yes, I will always give you whatever you want. You will never see me again. Is that not fair? Is that not what you want? Yes, I mean no, I don't know what you want. I want something you never use. Something you don't know you have. Something you'll never miss. If you tell me no, I will never leave. You will always see me. And I will bring others with me. More hideous ones than you could ever think of. We will plague and torment you always. Will you now say yes? I don't know what you want. I want... Where's my... Now, you'll be glad I looked for this. He said, I'm going to bring a lot more back, remember? If you say no. Can I find this? It's going to scare the hair off your back. You can call if you want to. I think I can find it. You can call if you want me to continue. I don't believe anybody wants me to find this. There's one incident I want to read, and then I'm going to read the exorcism. But only if you call. You don't call, I'm going to do anything. I don't know whether anybody's going to ever listen to me again, come to my anniversary service, or come to the King's House Sunday, or ever support me again. I gotta know. I found it. The infestation of the house, the oppression continued over many weeks. They finally contacted the Catholic priest. They gave him the name of the Warrens. And the Warrens came like they did in the Donovan case. And there came a night when David went to bed that night. He did so with great trepidation. He couldn't sleep. You can answer at King's House 1. He lay in the dark room, wide awake and alert. At first he simply felt uneasy. That emotion, however, slowly transformed into one of foreboding. Deep down, David knew something awful was about to happen. Shortly after midnight, it did. What arrived one by one were emissaries from the devil. First came the beast. It walked through the wall as though it didn't exist and stood in all its wicked glory at the foot of David's bed. It was out of its mind with fury. The priest's blessing had affronted its power. They had called a priest, but an ordinary priest is not authorized to perform an exorcism. He blessed all the rooms of the house from the basement up. The priest's blessing has affronted its power. The beast was there in front of David, enraged. You bleep bleep. You stinking human being. You betraying scum. How dare you insult me? I am the power. I'm all there is. There is no God. God is bleep. You are bleep. Its eyes were wild as it proceeded into blasphemies against the priest and the whole unfair kingdom of God. As the beast entity carried on with its awful fulminations, the two bloody helpers arrived. They materialized slowly until they appeared as solid as the first entity. Then they too began screaming and raging at the child. Debilitated with fright, David sought to cry out for help, but he had no voice. The madness went on and on. Sometimes they spat out accusations so fast that David couldn't follow what they were saying. Sometimes they spoke in languages he didn't understand, and many times what they said made no sense to him. We will make you one of ours. We will make you one of us. We own your soul. For hours, blasphemy, profanity, commands, demands, threats, predictions, wailing, screaming, blood-curdling shrieks flowed continuously. The degradation was total. What more could possibly happen? David Glatzel found out. When he did, he almost fainted. The beast and his two helpers began a profane chant and repeated it monotonously many times. Soon, David noticed the appearance of a bluish ball of light manifest in the vicinity of the three chanting spirits. The ball of light grew radiant, then elongated into a pencil-thin beam, which broadened out to the size of a man. The beam grew vivid in detail until a fourth entity materialized in the room. Once manifest, the creature was hideous in every way. It stood over 6 feet tall and had one eye in the front of the head and one eye in its back. Its nose was cut off, its mouth ripped open, its flaring red body was lacerated with slash marks out of which oozed blood. It had a gaping hole in its stomach. It appeared to be insane. The three original entities laughed evilly as other balls of light began to move ominously around the room. I can't read this. Shall I? Then another of the golf ball-sized lights began the materialization process, resulting in a fifth entity. This one was completely black and totally repugnant. Its body was burned and it appeared to have been cremated. To this spectacle of three berserk laughing entities and two recently materialized monsters was added a sixth. This corruption stood over 8 feet tall with only one eye, looked neither like a man nor animal, though it too stood on cloven feet and had horns protruding from its skull. Then a seventh entity showed, perhaps even more ghastly than the rest. This entity's head was split open in the middle, as was its face, blood dripped down from the eyes. It had one arm and only three fingers. One leg had a hoof. The other leg was cut off 2 inches below the knee. David was terrified as groups of inhuman beings began to materialize. Some had lizard-like features, while others had small heads with grotesque protruding snouts. Some of their bodies were half burned. Others had eyes gouged out or limbs hacked off. Others were cadaverous and desiccated with protruding bones and skulls, and still they kept coming with ghastly disfigurements and distortions of face, body, limb. Indeed, what David saw was no less than a legion of devils. And all 40 new entities appeared that night. Each was a unique individual monstrosity, with the original thing and the two previous bloody monstrosities that had materialized with him and entered the house, 43 of all, you know, all in all. Worst of all, every one of them would stay. Just like the Donovan case, they couldn't get an exorcist to come. They made application to the church. The Warrens had come. The research was done. The verification. The terrible events continued. Doctor examined the boy. He began to be brutalized and choked. Marks on his body, much like the Philippine case. Analyzed whether it was a psychosomatic happening. Finally, the church was convinced an exorcism was necessary. The priest arrived. Do you want to hear this? You think you can take it? The devil in Connecticut, by Gerald Brittle, Bantam Books. If this is not true and is being peddled as truth, it's criminal. The events precede and are around the ultimate murder conviction of Arnie, who has the exorcism appeared about to result in the death of David, cried for the devil to possess him to free the boy. He commits a murder, and his defense was the devil in him made him do it. We're leaving some people again. I can't believe it. I can't believe it. I'm just going to go out talking. I'm not going to be interrupted anymore. The priest came, several of them, for the exorcism. One by one, the priests donned their purple stoles. The afternoon of September 8th, while the other children of Brookville were beginning a new school year, would we join anybody at 1 o'clock? Just in case, give me a 1 and 0. Last chance for you to call.